Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, Chapter 3, Past Life. Echoes, ripples across the face of the deep, pebble lives dropped, forgotten dimensional interfaces between her lips and mine. We can read that in earth as it is in heaven, is also written as in heaven so in earth in the New Testament of the King James Bible. Either way, it seems like it requires a little more practice for mankind to manifest the will of God in this earth. Keep in mind, I may be talking about the human body or the planet Earth itself, as both are made of earth. The moments during which the consciousness is extended like a crystalline fractal of our third sight into the void around us can be the most beautiful and also the most disorienting of our experiences. In fact, third dimensional existence itself, often called real life by most humans, can occupy the entire CPU of human consciousness when left to its own unconscious programming. After all, we are either acted upon by the universe or we act upon it. We often look into the future or to the past as we test one scenario or another in the crucible of our imagination. From a physics point of view, they are the same. It is just as far from here to there as it is from there to here. And time is actually measured in distance, especially in space. In the singularity of creation, distance was zero because gravity was beyond escape, all crammed into that little space. In space, light distance is the method by which we measure our universe at the speed of light. And at the speed of light, time becomes zero for the traveler. Thought, as empirical data is now proving out, is immeasurably faster than light. We humans are evidenced that thought is fast enough to escape the pull of gravity inside the singularity. Perhaps it is not affected by gravity at all. What do you think that does to time in the universe? One's mastery of focus might allow omniscience to at least make momentary appearances, enough to provide testimony that such a circumstance really does exist. Time slows down to zero at the speed of light, thus the entire universe becomes visible to us, past, present, and future. Mathematically speaking, all possibilities happen. Although it is difficult to process, our past is rather more difficult to expand the potential of all potentialities than a past that does not involve us directly. For instance, reliving a car crash and accepting the reality of a different outcome that we experienced is not possible in this dimension. However, accepting how that crash affected us personally is possible. In fact, it can be vital to allowing us to learn what we designed to learn and to move on to a more merciful and clear position in the universe. The echoes from such a failure mode can preclude progress in the human psyche if it is not cleared like a hurdle on a running track. One will never finish the race in a single lifetime if we are standing in front of the hurdle in the middle of the track. Divide by zero, or even a number very close to it, and we get infinity. Neither of these outcomes is desirable when seeking solutions that match our 3D way of thinking, but let's face it, the universes are not really explainable in three-dimensional terms. They are balloons holding the energy of gods within them, collapsing into particles when mortality is desired and necessary, and existing as waves when unobserved. In fact, the distance waves travel is only relative to us, the sentience of the universe. For as we have learned already, it is our desire out of source for experience and existence that has sped time back up to create distance in the first place. When distance numbers become too cumbersome, we utilize lunar distances, solar distances, and even parsecs to explain time. As it turns out, it is only the human consciousness that can truly consider this. The distance across a single atomic bond, or the infinitesimal perturbation of distant suns by their unseen satellites, are as easily contemplated as the assembly of a child's toy. We don't actually have a way to prove this, but it is widely believed that only human beings are capable of these imaginations. The Dogon Indians know from their earliest traditions that Earth is the sixth planet, not the third. That is because they count from the outer planets toward the sun. And that is really quite amazing to hear, because Pluto was not discovered until the 19th century. The Dogons say they are the people from the stars, although the permittivity of their existence belies this claim. That does not negate the prehistoric tradition that they are exactly correct in their perception of the motion of the galaxy and the origin of planets. Either they were taught by off-worlders about the universe far away from Earth, or they are surviving remnants of an ancient traveler from other worlds. You can't get there by car or even by walking. These epiphanies can, however, be reached through meditation. It is how gods contemplate the smallest quanta and the birth of planets. It is how all creation occurs. It facilitates the blending of the conscious mind with the subconscious. The conscious mind, normally used to move the body about or to satisfy one's appetite or another, is completely different than the subconscious mind. We're not talking about the unconscious mind. That is another matter altogether, and that we will discuss later. One can easily find beings on all worlds who are unconscious, or who are simply not conscious that they are conscious. They are the ones you pass on the sidewalk and emit no signal when they pass you by. One person to a car, they commute beside you, oblivious to the world outside their rolled-up windows. They barely blink. They miraculously dress themselves each day, and may even hold a job and give birth to children as a biological result of primal urges to act as though they are procreating the species. But they do not know who they are or where they came from. They scold their children for not being adults and curse their own bodies for not allowing them to ever consume while maintaining the butt of a 16-year-old. They breathe air and drink all manner of concoctions and eat food, but they're not really alive. They are a vast sea of sleepwalkers. They are like pylons in the parking lot through which the awakened humans weave for sport. The synchronizing or tuning of the conscious mind with the subconscious mind is not easily done. Sometimes it can only be done for a few seconds at a time, or it can be felt like a shape in the fog during the layer between sleep and wakefulness. It is a difficult interface in which to dwell for any length of time without practice. The conscious mind considers and processes variables of inputs to the human being, while the subconscious mind is the actual operating system or the program that is running at multiples of light speed underneath the keyboard. Numbers, words, sounds, or other pieces of analog or discrete information are poured into the machine, and the subconscious mind cranks out the answers. Cells protect themselves against toxins, respirate, and even function quite well, all the way up to the day they die, without deviating from the program written at their birth. How does the program get written? What are the capabilities of the program? What inputs can it process? Are everyone's programs the same? Now you're thinking. The program is stored in the liquid crystal of the cell walls of each cell in the community called the human body. It's just a molecular layer of molecular switches, not unlike a silicon chip, only made with carbon-based amino acids and proteins instead of a combination of silicon and boron. That's simple enough. The binary code we have primitively utilized in our computers works on the same principles as the cellular processors, except that biological cells are able to process trinary, tertiary, and perhaps even more states of awareness. Zeros and ones switching back and forth sounds like it would be fast enough, but it still takes 3 minutes to boot up a computer, no matter what the clock speed might be. Cells, however, facilitate immensely complex algorithms that would humble the best game designer. Consider the professional baseball player. Some observers would say that they are not the sharpest knives in the drawer. Closer analysis would prove otherwise. A baseball, pitched at 95 miles an hour from the mound to the catcher's glove, covers the distance in 0.463 seconds. The average human body takes 0.75 seconds to begin moving after a visual or audible stimulus. The complexity of seeing the ball released, tracking the ball with the eyes to the strike zone, moving the hips, legs, shoulders, and arms to hit the ball at the optimum millisecond in less than 0.463 seconds is not biologically possible. Yet it has been accomplished consistently by thousands of professional baseball players for more than 100 years. Observe a high-speed photo at home plate of the batter's face at the precise moment the ball is hit, and you will see his eyes as though he was waiting for hours, looking right at the ball resting upon his bat. Equally amazing is the fielder who sees the ball come off the bat, begins sprinting to an instantly calculated point of intercept, tracks the speed and trajectory of the ball, waits until the exact moment, and dives forward at 25 miles an hour to catch the ball while he is weightless. Perhaps the baseball player is able to bring the subconscious mind to the moment of impact, operating hundreds of times faster than the conscious mind. The cellular subconscious program never reboots, and it never shuts down, and it cannot be overwritten until the cell dies and is replaced through division of a live cell to replace it. By the time you are 14 years of age, every living cell in your body, except your brain, has been replaced. Each cell functions on its own, usually in a manner that benefits the whole body with or without a nucleus. Without a nucleus, the only thing a cell cannot do is replicate. Cilia move debris like hands of a crowd might move a beach ball around an arena during a rock concert. Various liquids are produced to lubricate, dissolve, and even clean portals between the inside and outside of the body. Some cells face the outside interface and die by the millions each day, like the soles of the feet or the tips of the fingers. The program runs faster than any computer ever designed, and many hundreds of thousands of times faster than the conscious mind. Computers that match the speed of the conscious mind were invented in the year 2013. That much is understood. But how does the program get written, and what information is used to write it? Simply put, it is the environment that influences the writing of the program. The temperature, humidity, toxicity, abundance, scarcity, and even the consciousness of the being itself and its surroundings are the bits of data used to write the program. Once it is written, it cannot be overwritten. That is to say, as long as that cell is alive, it will make decisions, respirate, protect itself from toxins, feed itself, and expel waste, all automatically, according to the last instruction. It does not need the nucleus or DNA, and certainly does not need our conscious mind to carry out its functions. So again, how does the program get written? While the cell is alive, the program runs. When that cell dies, a cell beside it replicates to fill in the missing spot. It knows to be a muscle cell or a bone cell or that of a nerve by a very mysterious process of differentiation. But the whole organism goes on living because of this process. The environment at the time of this division is what writes the new program. That is extremely important to consider. Although we are not really advocating deathbed confessions here, all of the information accessible by the cell at the time of creation is utilized to write the subroutine by which this cell will operate, is unalterably written at this time. As long as that new cell runs, it will run this updated program. Now you might ask yourself, how does the new incoming cell know to become a muscle, or a tendon, eye tissue, or skin? You may have been taught that it simply consorts with the cell next to it to get that answer. Well, then that stimulates two more questions. What if the cell, needing replacement, is at the exact interface between two radically different cell types? What if there are only two cells, such as a sperm and an egg? How do they know which cell is which? Dr. Bruce Lipton, author of The Biology of Belief, told me personally of an electromagnetic image of the creature that serves as the extra-dimensional pattern by which the physical cell simply fulfill like a paint-by-numbers model. If you don't believe me, then attend medic school and find out for yourself. It's true. But think about it. Who makes the image of the being that the cells host? You do. That's correct. Your consciousness shapes and molds the very body that you occupy as a conscious being. The way you smile, exercise, comb your hair, lift things, and even feed yourself determines the shape of the vessel. You are the creator. You are the healer, and you are the judge of yourself by your own state of energy that is completely under your control. Not even God can overwrite your self-judgment. It is a program rule that forms the foundation of the universe and without which the universe would collapse back into the singularity it would be without you. So let's consider the environmental factors. The energy level of the cell is like the charge on a battery. It is a few electron volts, direct current. This DC level drops ever so slightly once the organism matures. Then a switch gets thrown that changes the way the power level is maintained in incoming cells. Somewhere around the age of 16 or 18, the cells begin to show age. They lose elasticity. They don't recover from injury as easily. The amount of sun damage, lack of moisture, overheating, overcooling, and level of nutrition for a cell changes its power level. Hormones flood the body, alerting it to the ever-pressing need to procreate, allowing it to change shape and function and prepare itself for falling in love. The cell resilience is switched to a subroutine until it gets instructions from you. When it divides, the new power level is inherited by the new cell. Every 7 years, the organism has replaced every cell in the body except the teeth and the brain. Every 14 years, every cell in the body has been replaced. These are not renewed once they are fully developed. at least under normal physiological conditions. No one has grown new brain cells after a stroke or regrown a tooth that has been pulled or had a spot of decay heal itself. For the rest of the cells, the total environment is considered. That means that if you are bathing your organism in hatred or fear, then the frequency and power level of either of those energies will be written into the new cell's program. If you are bathing your organism in self-love, the same holds true. The more time you spend in the frequency of love, the better the chances that the cells of your biological transducer, the body, will be replaced with higher frequency written into your cellular program. In other words, the subconscious program of your body, which has always been an integral part of the soul, runs with a program that has been shifted to a higher frequency. There are instruments and tools that can help the human being energize their own cells with new programming. The life stream generator produces rotating DC magnetic fields pulsing at 7.8 cycles per second that bathe the cells in energy, producing a euphoric calm that can last for 24 hours after only a short exposure. This magnetic field seems to recharge the cell's battery, so that if it should happen to divide during this period of time, the new cells are born with this new level of energy. This very effectively slows and can reverse the aging process and has consistently shown higher cognitive abilities in test subjects. Holding these magnetic rods, simply sitting in the magnetic field for a period of time, will allow the cells to access this energy during the programming process of new cells. This new level is free of fear and able to radiate a collective energy level that can actually be felt by other beings, which may be either in or of their body. Those entities and sentient beings that can only be present in environments with higher frequencies will begin to make their appearance. Likewise, the entities and beings that are allergic to the light, like shadows chased by the sun, will not be present. The environment created by a human being can affect a sphere of unimaginable size. Without reservation, the awareness of this ability triggers a phenomenon called awakening, or remembering. This experience is called ascension. You will go through many ascension experiences, although you may have gone through many lifetimes without one. And you may experience more than one in a single lifetime. Ascension almost always accompanies a realization that the spirit inside the biological transducer is eternal, and has not only existed for eons of time, but has experiences, memories, and scripts that can be remembered into the current lifetime. Let's talk about those right now. Experience is what it is. We gain it, whether we are awake or asleep, alive or dead, aware or oblivious. Humans experiencing near death often return to the living with a plethora of knowledge, sometimes altering their style of living because of it. The reality of the experience is entirely up for grabs. Like the optimist who believes we live in the best of all possible worlds, and the pessimist who fears that's true, it is the observation an interpretation of the individual that makes the reality. Where one person will love a film, the other will hate it. Where one person basks in the beauty of a piece of music, another person might be unable to resist the desire to turn it off. Where one person may love his job at desk number 101 on the 15th floor, the person at desk 102 may hate his job and can't wait each day to return to their reality. Where the person on one side of a kiss may melt into bliss, the other is looking at a watch. To make matters even more complex and wonderful, experiences can be revisited an infinite number of times and yield even greater lessons and perspectives. And each time they are visited, we call this observation, we recover a little something more. Like reading the scriptures, the level of love and inspiration will change each and every time the words are digested. During the decades I taught advanced gospel studies, I revealed to my students that the spirit with which the words were written are vital to consider when reading those words to get the maximum potential benefit from them. The definition of a sentient being is one who can consider any experience and change his or her pattern or script based on the consideration of that information. Does that mean that a dog that cowers when you go to pet it, even though it has never been beaten in its entire life, remembers a wrathful master from its own past lives, and thus fits the definition of a sentient being? Yes, it does, to a certain extent. Does it mean that a fish, instantaneously flitting from one path to another with a school of other fish, is a sentient being? No. Instinct is not intelligence. On some level, a group consciousness is expressed, but sentience is not a quality shared by fish. By the same token, dolphins and whales are sentient beings who have joy, fear, and passion. They have been observed making love for pure enjoyment and meditating while toning to the sea floor. So how does this have anything to do with past lives? Good question. Are past lives the process of our own manifestation and choice? Or are they an energetic result of judgment by which we evolve? Better question. It is probably most important that we resolve this issue now so that the perspective of spiritual evolution can be made more clearly to you. Your spirit is eternal, existing as long as Source itself. You are it, and it is you. You are not separate from it, but are connected to it in every way. It is the rational world of the third dimension that has been taught to you that masks this relationship. In a very real sense, you are God. And the world in which you live, that is to say, the reality of the world in which you live, is your own design. The misery, joy, hardship, or bounty that you experience is of your own making. You experience mortality and the disembodied realms and gather that experience as a matter of design, as haphazard as it might appear. This hit-or-miss kind of pachinko experience fits the pattern of chaos, rather than the harmony of construction as the energy follows the path of entropy. In order to avoid entropy, the lawful decay of energy due to random losses, one has to apply intelligence and intention. The point is that God decays into perfect chaotic entropy when no intention is applied. When intention is applied, things begin to build in a very real sense. Now your mind is about to expand, so relax a little bit. It won't hurt, but the room may spin slightly. Here we go. Whenever two energies meet in the universe, one energy will be greater than the other. When they combine, they will either constructively or destructively interfere with one another, depending upon their frequency and whether they are in phase or not. This is better explained in the chapter Waking Up in the Human Race, but it pertains to past lives here. So listen closely. You are a single energy. You have a single spirit address. Polarized with you, like the other side of a single coin, is your soulmate. This is the single being that was made at the same time you took the square root of yourself to make two of you. When this being is added back to you, and this can be very temporary, as the two of you meet from time to time in various existences, the energy level is so powerful that our whole solar system can be created. When the two of you enter a room, or a city for that matter, the energy will change simply with your presence. The quality of the change depends upon you. You can bring darkness or light. The choice is yours. When you bring darkness, the frequency lacks light. That is to say, you destructively interfere with the light that is there, consuming or canceling out energy from everyone and everything. This is why tyrants tax their people and gain strength from the people's fears. They cannot actually produce anything, so they have other people produce while they consume. The really dangerous ones consume a thousandfold what they could actually utilize personally, such as food, sex, or entertainments, so that they can support the legions of protectors and their armies that produce nothing as well. The judgment is instantaneous and exact. The frequency of that energy will send vibrations out into the room, the city, and in fact the universe. Everything that can resonate with that vibration will begin sympathetically vibrating as a result of the exposure to that energy. Good cannot be accomplished with dark vibrations. It is a self-correcting system. This is how you judge yourself, and why it is impossible for anyone to judge anyone else. Judge not that ye be not judged, lest ye be judged with that same judgment. Let me give you an example. If you lean an acoustic guitar against its stand with the body of the guitar facing outward, and then turn up the stereo in your home, you will eventually hear a string on that guitar ring out like it was picked. In actuality, the guitar string absorbed a certain amount of energy from the room, and at that exact frequency, because it sympathetically resonated with that frequency. If it could be measured, it would be called absorbance when the guitar string rang out like that. Everything in the universe has a resonant frequency and thus absorbs energy from all kinds of sources, good or evil, light or lack of light. In recent history, Asian governments wanted to develop a super weapon in the form of viral agents. This required assembling a team of scientists, financing their efforts, and asking them to create this new weaponized illness. They gathered the most talented minds they could find and began the secret planning meetings. The design of death was among the darkest of energies ever assembled on the earth. That conscious energy permeated the room and the building, although no one suspected their genocidal machinations. Their intentions were strong, and their design was shaping a defined focus. They were sequestered and supplied with meals so that they would not have to leave for food or water. They were drinking bottled water. The security was so tight that every morsel of food and water they consumed was checked and rechecked before consumption. According to the film Water, The Great Mystery, featuring the works of Masaru Emoto, their intention changed the arrangement of water molecules in the bottled water. Within hours, the entire team was rushed to the hospital, deathly ill. No poison was found anywhere. Yet they had so energetically changed the water with the darkness of their intentions that the water rearranged itself to nearly kill their mortal bodies. No antidote could be found, because it was the energy of the water itself that they had constructed with their own dark consciousness that poisoned them. As it turns out, Emoto effectively claims that water has a molecular memory. Now, the molecule itself does not change, but the unique way in which the water moves in Brownian motion, perhaps, is affected by the consciousness of sentient beings who interact with it. Brownian motion is the subtle juggling of molecules in liquid or gaseous states due to a movement of electrons in clouds around the molecule. The free electron pair on the oxygen atom normally attracts the hydrogen of another water molecule, but apparently the complex can be fatal as well as healthful. The human body is made mostly of and relies upon the quality of water. When the water is structurally changed and osmotically flows through the cells, the activity of those cells is affected. Every spoonful of water we drink changes the chemistry of the body. In this case, the water did not promote health in those cells, but rather caused them to cease functioning correctly. The system of the universe may be self-correcting when it comes to resonating or supporting dark designs. The judgment is immediate and exact. That is to say, one cannot access a portal of light or use the magic of blessings if one is dwelling in darkness or practicing evil on someone. These are the laws of physics and mathematics. When you add the number 65 to the number 43, you get 108, every time, in every dimension. When two or more frequencies are added together, the mathematical sum results instantly and exactly. The real lesson here is that the net frequency of the individual being is the result of the consciousness of that being. The real you inside that body of yours is more powerful than you can imagine. You are capable of incredible acts of creation and, as it were, destruction as well. The means by which you are able to do these acts is self-aligning according to the frequency of the being. It is not like an IP address, that is to say, you are not the same frequency all the time. You are infinitely variable. Higher and lower your consciousness shifts and flows like the wind moment by moment. It shifts while you are mortal very quickly relative to the universe. It shifts very slowly when you are not in a mortal state relative to the universe, because time slows down to nearly nothing. Everything in the universe becomes local to the wave-oriented person. No, it's not metaphysics. It's physics. A photon in wave state travels at the speed of light, so it arrives at Earth the same time it left the star, 36.7 light years away. Time is zero relative to the photon, while the speed of light is constant. It takes the photon 36.7 years to reach your eye, relative only to you. The purpose of mortality is to apply one's consciousness to raise the frequency of the spirit while it is in the body, thus bringing the body to the level of light. You become a light body. From lifetime to lifetime, the relationship between the spirit and the mortal body evolves, or, for that matter, de-evolves, based on the environment, which integrally includes the consciousness. If the being is conscious that it is conscious, and thus can apply eons of experience while in the body, then the being can evolve with purpose and progress. It is through meditation that they find the doorway to the soul. There is nothing wrong with prayer, except that if you are doing all the talking and not listening, you will probably not be able to discern what the universe is trying to tell you. This book will provide you those tools that are needed to open this door. When the door opens, you will find yourself in a new place. It might be a green meadow or a cave. It might be under the sea or slowly drifting through the clouds. But it will be the same place for a long time. Then you will learn to launch from this new place into the realms of time and space. Multiple futures and multiple pasts will fill your memories and teach you skills you could not possibly accumulate in one lifetime here on Earth. You will love and die and feel everything from 100 lifetimes while still in the flesh of a single lifetime, if you do this correctly. It is not only essential for your evolution to perform regular meditation, it is vital for the planet. As these times and places become known to you, the richness of those experiences will add to the wealth of mortality. After leaving your launch point in meditation, the consciousness is able to move right through time, space, and dimensions. Understanding what you are experiencing from the perspective of a human being is nearly impossible. This is a little difficult to explain, so please have patience while this unfolds in this chapter. I guess the easiest place to start is to consider if Adam had a belly button or not. According to the book of Genesis, Adam was formed from the dust of the earth and had the breath of life breathed into his nostrils by the Spirit of God. A full-grown man, with no belly button, stood up with the spirit of a fully conscious being inside of him, able to converse and reason with the gods who formed the earth and populated the Garden of Eden in the flesh. Yes, that's right. Elohim means gods, plural, okay? Now, Adam was fine for a full day, if you want to believe that a day of creation is actually a 24-hour day. Perhaps 1,000 or 10,000 years, if you want to believe that. It doesn't matter, either way. After he named all the animals of the earth, which may have taken more than an ordinary day, the gods decided that he needed a helpmeet. In other words, out of all the beings on earth at the time, and there were perhaps millions of lower Adam, there were none of them with whom the gods wanted Adam to breed. They wanted to raise the gene pool with a Kadmon Adam, or higher Adam. This means that a new female had to be built that was genetically compatible with Adam. 22 years ago, I could not have said this, but most of you now know that the best way to do this is to clone a perfect mate from the exact same genetic material and switch the sex genes to change the physical being from male to female. If this knowledge is not known by your year, it soon will be, for that is how it is done, not seldom confused by the natural process. This process is quite different than building an adult creature with no belly button. This is done by taking an egg and injecting the engineered human DNA into it. Keep in mind that human eggs were plentiful on Earth, for there were hundreds of thousands of humans on the earth at the same time Adam was in the Garden of Eden. They were of a lower Adam breed. Adam was fully capable of breeding with these lower humans, and Cain did exactly that when he was banished from the company of his family and took a wife in the land of Nod. The new female engineered for Adam was deposited into the womb of another female for gestation. It is not known whether the being was a lower Adam being or whether the being was off-world, but it is most likely the latter. She had to be born, raised to young womanhood, and trained off-world, because there is no record of Adam taking care of a baby in the records. She was named Eve when she was brought to Adam in the Garden of Eden. Like a marriage arranged by the gods many years in advance. She was conditioned in innocence and was strikingly beautiful, so the likelihood that she was raised around primitives in the general population of Lower Adam is extremely remote. She would most certainly have been abused in such an environment. Raised with the gods, off-world, and then brought as a young adult to Earth, she was introduced to Adam, who accepted her immediately, named her, and innocently let her wander the garden unsupervised. I am leaving the rest of the story to your individual tradition, as it is not necessary for this book. The point is that neither intelligences forming those two higher atom human beings originated on Earth. Neither did you. We want you to remember who you are. Because the planet and all the beings resonating with planet Earth right now need your total capabilities in order to properly complete the metamorphosis. At the writing of this book in the year 2015, there are close to 7.9 billion humans living on Earth. There would have been more than this, but for the cataclysms. That is exactly why I wrote this and have returned to your time to give it to you. As we venture forward into the next chapter, consider that time is equally valid in both directions. If anyone gives you grief about accessing the whole timeline, tell them you're studying theoretical physics.